For the sake of time, I'll just go ahead and get started. My name is Ann Mark Sherrill. I'm from Dubuque, Iowa. And this is my father, David Marks. And we're here, our colleague Brad is not here, and we're going to present to you a new evaluative offensive productivity model, and we've used this in college sports. See if it cooperates. Just a little bit of background and overview of what we're talking about. I will tell you the purpose of our study and why it is important. Also, we'll review some of the pertinent literature, specifically the sabermetrics and information that brought us to create the Smith Scoring Index, the SSI. We'll give you some example innings and also an example player of how to calculate an SSI. We'll compare it to some widely used metrics and give you a brief conclusion. First of all, the Smith Scoring Index is an idea that creates, it incorporates each play into an offensive metric. And so this is a little bit different than some of our other offensive productivity metrics. Some of the common ones are James's, of course, runs created, revised runs created, and win shares. These provide insights into a player's offensive ability, but also they say it's pretty easy formulas. Now, these are the easy formulas. Very simple, right? And I would like to point out that the win shares is the shortened version. And James's quote that I like is, "One can get approximately the same results with a process that can be explained in one page." And so for your average coach that's Little League or high school or even college, this isn't that easy. And the idea of the Smith Scoring Index is we wanted to make something that the average person could compute that would also be effective. And so that's the purpose and the significance behind our project. Of course, James's metrics are excellent, but they do fail to capture specific information about plays. And so we turn to the book. The authors introduced a way to describe the game in sorts of transitional states. And so this means things like we know that a home run's valuable. We also know that a stolen base is valuable for offensive productivity. But what is the difference? How much more valuable is a home run than a stolen base? We need to quantify this. Similarly, we know that being picked off is not good, but it's certainly worse in some situations depending on how many outs you have. Again, we need to find a way to quantify this, and that's what we've attempted to do. And so using these states, we can do this. Now, this part, again, folks, this is really basic stuff. It's just a new idea. There's 24 potential states in baseball, right? When your player first steps up, there's no outs, and there's no one on base. So you're at state number one. As you move through, potentially, you could have somebody on first base and no outs, second base and no outs, third base, no outs. You could have somebody on first and second, second and third, first and third, or you could have the bases loaded. Then, of course, you could have the same situations for each of the outs, so for one out and for two outs. That ends us up with 24 different states in baseball. Now, these researchers, the authors of the book, they did compute expected runs. And so for each expected state, you could anticipate the number of runs that would be scored. And they did this for Major League Baseball games from 99 to 2000 and presented the results. The runs that could potentially be scored ranged from state 17 to state 19 to state 8, with less than potentially one run, and almost 2.5 runs for state 8. And it's pretty easy to guesstimate which states these are, right? If you were going to look at the most potential for runs, that's going to be state 8 when you have the bases loaded and no one out. Similarly, state 17 would be two outs and no one on. And so the Smith Scoring Index computes this. We applied it because Brad is a college baseball coach. He coaches for the University of Nebraska. And we applied it to Big Ten collegiate baseball. For our sample, we used 96 Big Ten games, and so we had over 3,000 observations or data points. Each observation, we looked at what was the beginning state, what was the ending state, and the number of runs that was scored. And these are some of the, this is the results. So we had the expected runs, the number of observations, and the state in which they were in. And I'm going to pass this off to my dad, and he'll explain to you some of the information, particularly when we have a few observations for each some of the states.
Thank you, Ann. I'm Dave Marks, and I am a professor of statistics at the University of Nebraska in Lincoln, Nebraska. And Brad Smith was one of my graduate students working on a master's degree. He also coached as an assistant coach in a small college in Kansas, baseball, and he is now a graduate assistant coach at the University of Nebraska, which is why he's not here, because Nebraska is playing baseball right now. But he came up with this idea, and so he presented it as a master's project, and I thought it was a pretty good idea, and so we have decided to present it here. And what we have here is we have what Brad got from the Big Ten data. And as you can see, he has a number of observations here. We have the 24 states, but there are certain states which do not occur very often. For example, if you look at state number 4, that's if you've got nobody out and you've got somebody on third. Well, there's not an awful lot of ways you can have that happen. You know, you can get a double and steal, you can get a triple, but there's not a lot of ways, and that only happened 9 times in the Big Ten. And so one of the things that we would like to do, and I'm going to do this differently, is to combine the statistics from the Big Ten with Major League Baseball statistics. And this is Brad's idea, by the way. He used credibility theory to combine the two. But briefly, what that means is we're going to take a weighted average of the Big Ten values and the MLB values. And the weighting factor is going to be based upon the number of observations that we have. So if we have very few Big Ten values, it's going to be heavily weighted towards Major League Baseball. If we have lots of Big Ten values, it's going to be more weighted towards the Big Ten because that's what he was interested in. You could use any system of weighting that you wanted. The system that I would use is just use all MLB, because I don't think it really makes that much of a difference which way you go. You can see on the graph here that there are some differences between MLB and Big Ten, but again, if you deal with statistics all the time, which most of you do, you recognize when you have few observations, you have a lot of variability in the numbers, and therefore the variability that you see on the graph is due to the fact that we have small numbers of observations for certain states. Again, we can look at this. His credibility estimate is the column labeled CW estimate. And again, if we go through, let's just take a look at state 7. Okay, he only has 16 observations, and so the CW estimate is weighted much more heavily towards MLB. If we go to state 9, where we have a lot of Big Ten values, then the CW estimate is almost an average or weighted a little bit closer to the Big Ten values. Here is a little bit of an idea about how we go about doing this sort of thing. So this is a sample inning, and I'm going to go through this sample inning twice. The first time I'm going to go through it and tell you how Brad got the values that he did for the Big Ten. He took all of the games in the Big Ten until he got tired, and then he just took the Nebraska games and went through every single inning and calculated this. And so what happened here is there was a score, and this, I believe, was the opposition that scored, after player four. So if you looked at this, you would say, after player one in state one, they scored one run. So he has a large tabulation there. He has what state are you in, and then did you score a run after that? Did you score two runs? Just tick marks all the way through. So in state one, they had scored a run after that first state one. Going down that first beginning state, at state two, they had scored a run. At state 11, they had scored a run. At state 14, they had scored a run. Now, at state 18, they'd already scored their run. So after state 18 at this point, no runs were scored, so they got a zero there. And at state 22, they got a zero. So he did that for every inning, calculated the number of runs scored for each state, took the average. That's how he got his values. What is really important is how we get what is going on here. So player number one walked. That meant he started at state one. That's nobody on, nobody out. He ended at state two. That's a guy on first, nobody out. And what we're going to do is we're going to give a value to player number one from going from state one to state two. In this case, it's going to be a positive value because a walk was a positive result. The second player grounded out, but the person on first went to second. And so we went from state two, a guy on first with nobody out, to state 11, which is a guy on second with one out. Now, I don't even know whether that's going to be a positive or a negative, but looking at the expected number of runs at each state, we can tell whether that was a positive or a negative result and how positive or negative it was. And we go through the entire system, and for each player, then every time they're at bat, they get what their beginning state was, what the ending state was, and we're going to take the difference. So, for example, if we have a runner on first and nobody out, and we have a single, and we end up with a guy on first and third and no outs. He started at state two. He ended at state six. At state two, he would have expected to have scored 1.091 runs. At state six, 1.846. The difference is 0.755. That is his value for that at bat. If you have a runner on first with one out and you ground into a double play, you know that's not good. But how bad is it? Well, we started at state 10 and we ended up at state 25. State 25 is all out, okay? And so we had an expected number of runs at state 10 of 0.554. If you're out of the inning, the expected number of runs is zero. And so he lost 0.554 for grounding into a double play. Again, we've got two more examples, and I'm going to jump to the last one. And the easy way to think about this is if you score a run, you get credit for that. So a guy on second, we hit a double, the guy on second scores, end up in the same state, but we have scored a run, so we get a plus one. Another way to think about this is suppose that there's a guy on third, okay, nobody out, and you single. The guy on third scores. You get a run. But your expected number of runs for a person on first, nobody out, is fewer than the expected number of runs for a person on third and nobody out. And so the amount of credit that you get is less than a run. Another little catch in all of this is if you hit a home run, okay? If you hit a home run, nobody on, nobody out, you get one run. Still, nobody on, nobody out, but you got a run. If you hit a home run with a guy on first, you're going to get more credit than if you hit a home run with a guy on third. Because in both places, you're going to end up with nobody on, but you had more points associated with the entry state with a guy on third than with a guy on first. So what Brad did was he looked at how the different win shares and runs created metrics dealt with his Smith, it's Brad Smith, by the way, Smith scoring algorithm. And you can see that they're very highly correlated. They look very much the same, except, and I've got to look at this carefully here if I get the right ones, players F and G. You will note that player F, in the usual methods of looking at offensive productivity, are very high, but in the Smith scoring algorithm, it's not as high, whereas in G, the reverse is true. So they're not looking at the same thing. One thing the Smith scoring algorithm does is it really takes into account clutch hitting, and I'll get to that in just a minute. They are the Pearson correlations, and you can see that the runs created and the win shares are all highly correlated with each other. Again, they're correlated with the Smith scoring algorithm, but not as highly correlated. Okay. So suppose that we start with a player in state two. Okay, state two, nobody out, guy on first. And he grounds into a fielder's choice. That is, he grounds out, they force the guy at second, so we still have a guy on first. But now we have one out rather than no out, so we went from state 2 to state 10. That results in a decrease of 0.537 runs. Now, let's suppose that instead, he grounds out, but the runner on first goes to second, and he's out at first. Now we go from state 1 to state 11, I think it is. And you lose points, but not as many. 0.196 fewer points by doing that. And so it makes a difference if you move a runner along, if you don't move a runner along. The example that I like to give, and this is not on the slide, so I'm just going to talk extemporaneously here, is about clutch hitting. If you've got two outs and a guy on third, and you get a single, that's good because you're going to score a run. Now, you're not going to get a full point, but you're going to get a lot of points for batting that guy in. Okay? The difference is you're going to have a guy on third and two outs, a guy on first and two outs. You're going to lose points there, but you gain a run. Opposite situation. There's nobody on, two outs, and you hit a single. You're going to get points, but not very many, because even with two outs and a guy on first, the chances of your scoring is not very great. And so you've singled both times. One time, you get a lot of points for singling. Next time, you don't get very many. Again, two outs. And so if you look at this, what it does is it rewards you for getting clutch hits. If the situation is such that there's nobody on two outs and you make an out, it doesn't hurt you that much. Last time I gave this talk, somebody asked the question. They said, okay, suppose that just out of pure chance, somebody comes up in a clutch situation all the time. Isn't he going to get better points just because he came up in a clutch situation? Aha! I thought about it, and I said, no then. I know why the answer is no now. And the answer is because it's high reward, high risk. If there's a guy on third and two outs and you make an out, you lose a lot more points than if there's nobody on and two outs and you make an out. And so high reward, high risk, if there's clutch hitting. If it's not clutch hitting, low reward, low risk. It all balances out. So what this does is it really takes into consideration the difference between zero, one, and two outs. It makes a difference whether or not you get a single or a walk in lots of metrics. In this case, it doesn't. As a matter of fact, if you walk and steal second base, that's the same as a double if you're the leadoff hitter. You've got a guy on second with nobody out. Give credit to the person. How much time do I have? 5 minutes. Oh, goody. So I can give you another example of that I thought of yesterday. Of course, I was here at the conference yesterday, but let's just assume that I was at a baseball game, okay? And Ann is sitting there, and I'm sitting there, and here's what happened. And this is where you have to think about the SSI a little bit. It's not always clear-cut. It's like, is it a hit or is it an error? Somebody has to make a judgment decision. Okay, the guy gets up, and he hits a triple. And this guy that hits the triple, I told my wife, she could have gotten an inside-the-park home run. I mean, he was slow as molasses. Next guy up. So we got a guy on third, nobody out. Next guy up hits a shot to the second baseman. Runner holds. Good, smart thinking. Next guy up hits a slow ball to the hole. The second baseman runs over there. The third base coach says, go! And the guy looks and says, me? Yeah, go! And so he starts. Second baseman gets a ball, bobbles it. The guy grins, keeps on plodding along. Second baseman gets it, throws it. Catcher has it. The guy's still 10 feet away from home plate. Okay? He's out. So we went from a guy on third with one out to a guy on first with two outs. Is that all the batter's fault? The guy should have never, ever started towards home. So we have three different scenarios how we can assign points. We can do it the rote way. That is, guy on third with one out goes to a guy on first with two outs, take the differential, we're done. We could say, oh, if he had stayed on third base, we'd have had a guy on third with one out, a guy on third with two outs, charge that to the guy that was at bat. Then the next batter starts with a guy on first and two outs, and we do that differential. Or you could go ahead and charge the one out, guy on third to two outs, a guy on third to the batter, two outs, a guy on third, two outs, a guy on first to the runner, and go with that. Or, my wife is listening to this, she says you could get rid of the third base coach, which is probably the best thing to do. There are a number of other ways that you can do this. Brad used it at Nebraska to figure out what was the best leadoff hitter by looking at only situations where they were leading off, that is state zero. And you can also figure out when to steal. You can look at where you are on first base with X number of outs, second base, X number of outs, or get caught, nobody on, with one more out, and then that gives the ratio of the proportion of times you should be able to steal. So we've gone through this. What I think the real advantage of this is, if you are a high school or a little league coach and you want to evaluate your players, you can put this in an Excel sheet. You can take the MLB values for these 28 states, put them in, and get a result like that. It's very easy and simple to do. Any questions for Ann?
I know you worked really hard getting this presentation.
I saw this presentation for the first time yesterday.
I tell you what.
Yes, sir.
Single and then is thrown out trying to
scored that he was out. Because the next batter is up there and there's nobody on, one out. So if he gets thrown out, it's like he made an out. Yeah. That's an easy one. Now, the hard one is, okay, he's on first base. He's going to go. We're going to have a hit and run, okay? And the dimwit batter misses it, and he's thrown out. That's why I said everything's not perfectly clear-cut on these. That's where you get the question. Okay, we're good.
All right, thank you.